I'm going to give a brief overview of the second catalog of agents detected by the TULAC. That's a group effort, and you can see the many people who contributed to this effort, among whom Chuck and Stefan Larsson, who are here today. I'm just briefly going to touch about a few things, but if you want more details, the paper has been posted on that for PH already 3 months ago. So since the first talk about already mentioning Fermi data, let me just flash this slide, the Fermi large telescope, the telescope made up of a tracker to measure the direction of the photon, calorimeter to measure the energy, and there is a shield of anti-coincidence detector in order to reject the cosmic wave background built by an international consortium. You can calculate it here. That the effective area as a function of energy, we recently switched from set of effective area where the effect of pileup or ghost events that actually are uncorrelated to the event of consideration were corrected for in a very simple, straightforward way, where now we are switching to a new set of IRF where this effect is directly taken into account by tuning the cuts in the Monte Carlo simulations, and it allowed to recover part of the effective area at lower energy. But the dependence of the PSF as a function of energy, you can see the dependence very strong, and the high energy photons, of course, play a very large role in improving the significance of the detection and the localization of the source. So there are many assets for laser science. The two previous talks mentioned them, interested in the sensitivity, a fairly large uniform coverage at high galactic latitude, as you can see from this map, which is a flux vivid for the TULAC catalog. And you can see that the exposure is fairly uniform. Overall, the lifetime efficiency of the telescope is 74%, including all the effects, which is not bad. So the second LARC is actually the third release of AGNs. That's the first one you probably are familiar with. It's called the LBAS, based on 3 months of data that includes only bright sources with TL greater than 100. That was actually released after 3 months into the mission, and it included 106 high-confidence associations with a slightly more bright spectrum of lasers than PLARC. And the good surprise was that actually that during this first release, only 30% of the sources were actually initially detected by EGRET. So then came the first LARC catalog based on 11 months worth of data. This time around, we had about similar number of bright spectrum of lasers and VLARCs, and the total number was about 3,600 sources in the high confidence list. Let me now come to the two second LARC, and just that table such summarizes the differences between the one LARC and the two LARC. So the one LARC based actually on the general overall catalog of one FGL, and of course the second LARC based on the second the two FGL. So major difference is that the analysis is different. So we switch from unbinned to binned likelihood analysis. So the reason being trying to limit the computation time. Is required to analyze the many data, and actually the binned analysis turned out to be more precise in determining the significance of faint sources. I mentioned the set of IRFs is different. In terms of association methods to associate the sources to the AGN counterparts, the one LARC was based on a pure Bayesian method on which only the position coincidence was used, while for the second LARC, we have three different methods, the Bayesian one, same as one LARC, and two other ones, which in addition to the spatial coincidence, the flux of the sources are taken into account to assess the probability of association. So initially we had only two attacks, catalogs, crate and PTCAT. Right now we have many for the catalog and the association rate. So the fraction of sources located at high galactic latitude, which are now associated, increased from 61% for the one that to now 75% for the two. Okay, so we built upon the two FGL catalogs. That's a nice app. And that the associations which are provided in the program with the AGN group are very much related to the catalog group. Well, very tremendous work in order to extract all this information. So the two FGL catalogs group 1873 sources with TF greater than. So that's a map showing the sources of for the two LAC. So out of the 1319 sources located at galactic latitude greater than 10 degrees, we have 117 counterparts. We have 26 cases for which we have double associations. So this represents 991 gamma ray sources. Out of those, we have 886 high confidence sources, and in the clean sample, sorry, we had 886 high confidence sources in the clean sample. The difference between the overall sample and the clean sample is that in the clean sample we require that we have only a single association and we have no analysis flag. So the sources are well analyzed in the likelihood analysis. So you can already tell from this map that you have a difference between the northern part and the southern part, especially for the blue points which represent PLAC. So we have quite more of these sources up north than down south. Looking at the angular separation, that's actually the distribution that we have. That's actually the angular separation between the gamma ray sources and the radio counterparts. That's distributions that you expect for two associations, and that's the distribution for random associations. We estimate for Monte Carlo simulations that the fraction of false associations is less than 10%. And that's the size of the error box for the gamma ray sources. You can see that it's for the faintest sources, we have about 0.2 degrees of size of the error box. So, beyond the standard fast spectrum wave quasar and VLAC classification, we introduced for the 1LAC STD based classification promoted by Paolo Giomi and his collaborator. The idea is to locate the position of the synchrotron peak using the slope, radio and optical, and X-ray from archival data. And so we define the LSPs. So the low synchrotron peak sources are source sources for which synchrotron peak is less than 14. Intermediate synchrotron peak source for which the peak is between 14 and 15. And the HSP, so high synchrotron peak source, which are beyond 10 to the 15 Hertz. So that the general census that we have for the entire TULAC catalog, the TULAC clean sample, and we also define a low latitude sample, which is much less complete. Just brighter sources are included there, but we just have the completeness. So you can see that in terms of flat spectrum of the quasars versus BLAC ratio, now we have much more, we have about 20% more BLAC than flat spectrum of the quasar. And a new type has emerged, which is of unknown type, which now represents a sizable fraction of all sources. So sources are actually lasers for which the data quality doesn't really allow us to assess whether those are BLAC or high. Interestingly enough, so essentially all the fast spectrum quasars are LSPs, as expected and already known from the 1LAC, while for VLAC, actually the largest fraction represented by HSPs. And a very large fraction of sources for which we cannot actually assess any quantification for the lack of data. I should also point out that in terms of other AGNs, now actually the number the 2 lakh is actually lower than the one that created the 1 lakh. One reason some sources actually went out, some radio galaxies that were just mentioned in the previous talk, so 3C78, 3C111, 3C120 are out of the clean sample, while format A and then B are in. And in terms of our sources, which are missing actually 45 sources in the 1 lakh sample now are out, just because of variability. So the overall TS measured over 2 years now is less than the threshold. I mentioned that BLRs are overly represented in the northern hemisphere with respect to the southern hemisphere. You can see there, so obviously we are missing some BLRs in the southern part. The redshift distributions actually are very similar to those which were observed for the 1 lakh. So quite when we do equations, they peak on redshift 1, BLRs peak at much less lower redshift, and that breakdown between the different subclasses of BLRs with HSP peaking at low redshift and ISP and LSP just extending south R. Should mention that the important feature is about 55% of the BLRs lack measured redshift, and actually this fraction is actually uniform for essentially all subclasses. So the same fraction for HSP, ISP, LSP of BLRs redshift. The maximum redshift that we obtained for fast spectrum with the quasar is 3.1. That is actually some value for the 1 lakh. That came as a surprise. So we detect more faint sources located at short distance, but we don't measure more high distance sources, which is kind of a surprise. It's for the bad catalog. 40% of the fast spectrum with the quasar have redshift greater than 2, and there are about 50 BCCAT fast spectrum with the quasar with redshift greater than 2. So why is it so? It's not clear. It might be that those sources actually peak at lower energy and are very faint in the light band path. So that's a fairly famous plot that we showed many times, showing the photon spectral index versus flux. So there is a strong dependence on the detection limit with respect to the photon index, essentially related to the PSF dependence on the energy. That applies to the flux, but if you look now in terms of energy flux, then the dependence is much less. So that's something which is worth keeping in mind. Looking at the photon index distribution, so fast spectrum with the quasar was already mentioned by Thomas early on. Fast spectrum with the quasar were essentially all soft. The photon index greater than 2, BLRs are broader range, but extending of harder sources, but with a very limited overlap. Looking at the unknown type, you can see that potentially it's very, very broad and could potentially include both species in about equal weight. So I think it's interesting to look at the photon index distribution for those BLRs which have no measured redshift. We can compare them to the photon index distribution for those sources which are located at large distance. So they are actually very soft. The ones located at low distance are actually very, very hard. And you can see that those which are we are lacking ranges actually probably include some of those. So it doesn't seem to be a strong bias in terms of selection, in terms of ranges also. So, but that's just some hints on kind of value of already. That was already shown by Thomas, showing the photon index distribution versus the position of the synchrotron peak, and you have this nice dependence that was already even observed with the LBAS sample. Looking at the dependence of the photon index versus redshift, you can see that we don't have much dependence there. We do have a strong dependence overall, but if you just now break down the different subclasses into the different sources into different subclasses, you can see that essentially there is no much dependence. So where are the bad
high red shift sources, how would they appear in these plots? Presumably they would be located there in this corner. They are missing now, but hopefully by improving the analysis technique and allowing us to recover part of the effective area at low energy, what could be more sensitive to soft sources, and hopefully these guys will show up there in the future. That's the dependence on the of the gamma ray luminosity versus redshift, and of course we have a compliance related direction limit. But you can see that we have room for more sources at high at right redshift, 10 to the 48 Earth per second gamma rays sources located at high redshift would easily be detected by the light. So if not, they are not detected, it means that they are not there. So that, again, that's a plot which has been intensively used in the context of the phasor sequence, showing the photon spectral index versus the gamma ray luminosity. You have a separate branch for the non-blazer sources, while the very strong correlation between these two quantities for the blazers. And of course, that will be probably discussed by several people later in the meeting. But what I'd like to draw your attention to is now you consider the different classes separately. Just look at five spectrometer quasars on their own and VLAT on strategy there. You can see that actually the correlation is something that you don't see. Although the gamma ray luminosity covers over three orders of magnitude, you don't see much correlation between the photon index and the gamma ray luminosity. So I think that's an experimental fact that definitely needs to be. One of the nice features of Fermi is that actually a number of detected TV AGNs now much very high. So out of the 45 identified TV AGNs, 13 now right now at the 2 lab and 34 at the clean sample, which is very, very nice. But again, we should take into account that only 13 of those show significant variability in the Fermi. 22 TV AGNs were scattered since the launch of Fermi, and Fermi was instrumental in the detection of 9 of these objects. And so correlating the photon index, the TV, and in the GV range, one can find this nice correlation there, which might actually bear some effects on the EDL attenuation. So you are here, many people are experts in radio, so I'll keep that. It will probably be, again, heavily discussed later in the meeting. That's actually the flux, radio flux distribution for platinum quasar VLAT at one final time for the two VLAT. Platinum quasar, of course, are the higher fluxes than VLAT. And in terms of luminosity, that is distributions that you have for platinum quasar feeding it in the late 43 Earth per second at 8 gigahertz, while the Earth actually show a lower range and lower fluxes. A nice thing is to compare the distribution of fluxes for source sources, which are the 2 lakh, with the overall distribution for all paid sources, and of course, black sources are essentially comprises the brightest sources of the radio. The 2FGM catalog includes the light curve, once light curve for all sources. And I think that's a precious resource, and I would strongly encourage people who are looking at sources at different wavelengths to use that resource. One might not be optimized for your purpose, but at least it's there for you to use. And whenever you produce a light curve, I also encourage you to compare your results. So if you see a significant difference, you might reconsider or look into your analysis. So using this data, one compares compared, we looked into the differences in terms of variability for bracket weight quasars and DLR and crowns. That's actually plotted versus the relative flux uncertainty, which is a metric for statistics. And you can see that bracket weight quasars are actually more viable than DLR. It actually applies to looking at the variability index, which is actually derived from the logarithm, so for likelihood test variability versus peak when there's a nice correlation. So, practically, with the phrase of being the most viable of an agent. That's actually the PSD, comparing for fractional phrase of NPLX, which have similar slopes, but again, the fact that you have a shift there demonstrates that DLX are less viable. It was mentioned that you have platinum quasars and the low frequency peak sources exhibit curvature in the Fermi band. That's an example. The F2FGL provides data in these five different bands. So you can compare your result with those of the catalog, and that this shows the beta parameter as a function of flux. So we have about 60 sources for which show strong spatial curvature in the. So that's the summary. I won't go through all the points. I think that the 2 lakh is a significant improvement over the 1 lakh with about 50 more sources which have been associated. So the next catalog should be based on 5 years worth of data. Expected to be released about 2 or 3 years to get going more. Oh yeah, okay, I should have mentioned that we have collaborators working hard in order to getting more ready. So there is an activity on the Fermi side of those
lack of an increase in number of lasers as you go to higher directions. How does that compare with radio surveys? When radio surveys go much deeper, they also don't pick up a lot of high frequency data.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can answer the question, but okay, that's the distribution for the maybe one of elements. So yeah, that's actually the C-graphs distribution. So again, we increase the exposure by quite a lot, and it's
kind of another negative similarity between Fermi and Janssen is that they run out of blazars to get the other.
We do have a table where we present the 45 sources which are missing, but inside the paper of the paper 10, there is no peer review concerning that event. That's a lot of making uniform all the information based on
see that
yeah, Calyx was not foreseen from the beginning. Of course, so that all LSPs, so low synchrotron peaks, so we don't have high synchrotron peak sources with that behavior. But the voice is AO 0 to 35.
But you saw one and two VLAN.
Yes.
But do you see different in the frequency between without and
beta? No. Not really. You can see it. But of course, so that, I mean, not everyone calls them VLAN products. So there are some of them, there are a few of them which are high luminosity VLAN.
No,
there were 52 flight spectrometer quasars and 12 VLANs. But actually, I should say that probably there are more showing curvature. Actually, the condition imposed by the Tata group on actually switching. I should have mentioned that what I showed there is the result of a log park polarity. It means that the catalog was very conservatively switched from pure power law to log parabola for some sources in order to improve the significance. And so actually, if you look carefully at the data, there are many more significant fraction of more sources showing curvature which are not assigned